Well, hello there. This is Jim, the Keys Bartender. The Keys Bartender podcast, a podcast about bartending and Keys life. So, yes, it is getting warmer here. It is getting warmer down here like it is any place in the Northern Hemisphere. Newsflash, right? I act like I guess that's a royal we. Every time it gets hot again, it's like, what the hell is this? Why am I sweating? And we are in spring, which is like summer in, let's pick a place, Indiana. And then we go into our summer, which is like springtime in hell or Hades, whatever you prefer. Yeah, it gets really hot down here. I guess it's not the heat, it's humidity. You hear that a lot. But you just get used to it. You accept it. You get used to it. There's no other alternative, is it? Try to stay cool. Do things like drink lots of water. Not do things that dehydrate you. And usually you're fine. So it's just not one of the things you're used to after a long, you know, somewhat reasonable winter and fall and early spring. I should have went fall, winter, in early spring. We have more temperate weather. Our body's not used to it. Same thing goes for jobs when you're bartending. For a lot of you bartenders out there, you've been bartending for a long time. I understand that. Or doing whatever, I guess, is applicable to other jobs. But once you're get into the groove of doing your thing, it's hard to get out of it. You ever hear that saying? Foolish inconsistency is the hobgoblin to little minds. Well, we all pretty much have little minds when it comes to our little areas of expertise. And we get to be expert at something. We kind of cling on to that method that makes us an expert. Know how to handle your crowd at your former place, how to use the system at your former place, how to talk to your coworkers, how to handle your regulars. And moving on to a new place, there is a lot of resistance going on in your head, your ego, to new systems because it's something you're not natural at, something you can't do innately, where you don't realize that it took a certain amount of time to become expert and skilled in technique. So here I am at a place going in today that's more craft. And for years, I went from banquet, and banquet is loose bartending skills. I hate to say it. You know, some there's finer dining banquets, I understand. But in banquets, you're just cranking out the drinks, right? It's an open bar most of the time. And you could have two bartenders, 200 people. And, you know, averaging four drinks a person, you got to crank out 800 drinks. 400 a piece? That's a lot. That's a lot. And, you know, most of it is, I mean, if you have your own system, you can just crank those out. If you have soda guns, like I did in-house catering. So everything was at my fingertips. The ice machine from our bar, and this is going to be, for some of you bartenders, it may not be a shock, but for the ice machine was literally 8 inches behind me when I was bartending and catering. It was a big industrial ice machine. And you just turn around when you needed ice and you scooped it. We didn't need any bar backs. We may have had like 14, 15 liquors and mixers and not mixers, 14 liquors and liqueurs. And whatever someone specially requested, we had like four beers, maybe four wines, and six sodas, four or five juices, some mixers out there, some maybe Bloody Mary mixer, some sour mix. And that was it. And you were just cranking along those drinks all day long. It was so easy. You could put out five, I don't want to over-exaggerate. Average about five drinks a minute. Easy with this scoop, boom, boom. 10 seconds. I throughout the night, I mean, I think that's kind of crazy. Probably a minute. That'd be 300 drinks in an hour. And let's say you average, it's a 4 hour, 5 hour open bar, that's 300 minutes, and you crank out two drinks per minute total. That's 600 drinks, 1200 drinks between the I mean, that's on average. We're talking from Philadelphia. I was catering in Philadelphia. It's a heavy drinking city, much like Milwaukee, or someplace out of Chicago. So we're doing this in catering, just cranking out the drinks. And then I go on after years of going into a restaurant. When you go into a restaurant, people are paying a la carte for their drinks. And I like to say a la carte because they're paying per drink. When you're paying per drink at a fancy restaurant, they're a little more particular on how they get their drink. I learned it the hard way. I know you think, you're smart enough, Jim. You should know to make the drink. No, I was just operating under my previous experience that people were just drinking the drinks at an open bar. They really didn't care. Never get anything sent back at an open bar. They just order another one. They don't like it. And they say, hey, can you make it? Can you make it light on this? Someone's paying for it. Yeah. And someone is paying for it ultimately. It's usually, the family or the father or the bride and groom themselves. But at a restaurant, the consumer is the one consuming the drink. The person consuming the drink is usually the one that's paying for it, or close relation to the person that's paying for it. So you got to be more particular. And that's at a regular bar and restaurant. You could have some signature cocktails, some martinis. That's what I worked at. And I learned that way. And then I went back. I did it. Well, I did, in between then, while I was doing the fine dining, I was also working at a tiki bar. And tiki bar is not as particular, not as particular, not as many drinks, even though there was a lot of liquors, as there were at the restaurant, a lot of different liquors, a lot of choices. And then you go on. I'm sorry for that heaving right there. But then I go on from the fine dining to the tiki. And in between there is a family restaurant. That's where I went last for the last eight or 9 years. And little less, some people were more particular about their drink. They wanted it made this way and that way. And they had a particular, family restaurant. Yep. We get some people like that. But then at the place I'm helping to, I'm working at partially, it's a craft cocktail site. It's a martini bar. And it's all about presentation and exactness. I talked about it on yesterday's show. And my ego and my senses are rebelling sometimes, but I have to go, this is what is done with that. That's why I did the previous show. I said it has to be exact. I have to go back to using a shot glass for measurement. There's no eyeballing. Each cocktail has to be the same. The person has an expectation. And I have to break that person inside my head and says, listen, you got to get these drinks out. You got a lot of tickets in front of you. Speed will come with time. The more you do it, the faster you become. I said it on previous shows, it takes, I've heard it takes up to 10,000 hours to become a master or something like innately skilled, whatever you want to call it. It takes a lot of time. A lot of time. And you just have to persevere because there's going to be a little part of you say, this is bullshit. I used to do it all this other way. I don't like doing it this way because it doesn't feel natural. Doesn't feel natural. It's like sleeping on your back at night or sleeping on your side. If you're used to sleeping on your side, you don't like sleeping on the va your back, vice versa. Not I need to have like three pillows. No, I don't need three pillows. I like to have two. I can sleep with one. I used to sleep on very hard mattresses. Now I kind of like a soft mattress. But I could see myself getting used to a hard mattress again. It's just the what your body and your brain is comfortable with, and it'll just go with the flow. And in the meantime, you're just kind of faking it. You just go and do it. I did it the other night when I was serving. I'm not really comfortable serving. It was not a natural at serving, but I'll tell you, I felt more natural than some other people doing serving. If you go outside your comfort zone, it doesn't make me a better person. I'm trying to make myself a more accepting of new responsibilities. How's that sound? Not rebelling. I'm trying not to get my ego to rebel against something that, when you're really comfortable doing something, you'll rationalize that is the harder way of doing it. I know the easier way of doing it because I was doing it that way. And that's not necessarily true. It wasn't the easier way of doing things. It was the easier ways, a way for me to do it because of the experience I had doing it. And once I get comfortable doing the techniques that I'm doing now, the more comfortable I become. And I think that expectation to become more comfortable with a system is, I think it opens up the learning process and lets you get, be able to go into that flow. So when I look at it, we maintain the menus right on the bar. We don't learn them and just forget about them because we've been adjusting some of the recipes for the drinks. We got a list of them. I actually lost my book and I had to rewrite them. I rewrote all the drinks in a little stack of cards. And I'll get them wet and then I'll just rewrite them again. And because pretty much in, a week or two, they may change one or two of the recipes. But that doesn't really bother me because I know in my head, if I have to write it down, that's just another step for me in memorization. I have a process. I realize that. But I also have those underlying things that make me go against the process, not accept it. I know. Whenever you think of process, you think of a cult. And I was thinking about this. There's a documentary on this group called Synanon. And Synanon had no association with a 12-step program. It just had a non on the back of it. And it was for dope addicts in the 60s, in the early 60s. It was run by this guy, Charles something or other. But it's called Synanon. And they have a documentary on it. And the guy started doing it, and he had it. The way they stopped people from the therapy they used was kind of drastic. It was kind of like a radical shedding of frustrations because people get in this therapy session. It's a group therapy session they were using, and they call it the game. And it's where they say some of the meanest things they can to people. Now, they didn't go in depth on the game whether these things are true or not. But these people are stripping other people down and they're saying things and they're letting things out. And supposedly, in this group, they had a really high success rate of just shattering that ego by, I guess saying all these horrible things about it. And then eventually, I mean, I'm on the second episode, and eventually the group started shedding the therapies section of it for drug addicts and started becoming a lifestyle group where people joined it as kind of like a club and then a way of life. And now it's turning into a cult. So that part, that's the bad part. But the therapy was kind of pretty, they had a basis for it actually because it worked. It tore down the ego. Maybe. But it sure feels like it does when you see the therapy session called The Game, that it's a direct assault on your ego, and that helps you when you strip away the ego, then you have less things defending, right? Less things to defend. Okay. Well, that's remember. So when you're remembering, when you're doing a new system, doing something new at work, get a new manager, get new ownership, it may not necessarily, it's not always a bad thing to change things up. A lot of times it's a good way. And a lot of times when we're against it, it's your subconscious doing that. So sometimes, as long as it doesn't harm your morals and your bottom line, your paycheck, what's the worry? Just go with it. I'll be back in a moment.